This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello. For many gardeners, a vegetable plot simply isn't complete without that ever-dependable staple, cabbage. Sliced into a slaw, stir-fried, steamed or baked, there isn't much you can't do with cabbage.
Steve, there are a lot of emotions in the stadium at the end. What are yours?
Frustration. And upset. Mm. Of course.
What's going to happen now, do you think?
That's for others. Mm-hmm. That's for others to decide. There's nothing I can do about that. Mm. Always in life, in football, I've always had the ability to roll up my sleeves and get stuck into it, which I'll do tomorrow morning, mm-hmm. unless I hear something different.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
I think could have nicked it in the end, but I still don't think it would have. It would have meant a huge difference to me personally after what I've witnessed in the stadium tonight.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. And this episode, unfortunately, we couldn't track down the mad few, but I've managed to get a couple of cabbages. Dan Rogers of the villaunderground.com and Chris Budd.
Good.
Welcome. Announce Warnock.
So last time we spoke, we alluded to the fact that Steve Bruce had made a big, big mistake of calling out the mad few in public. But what Bruce doesn't realise is the mad few, let's say they've got a few protection rackets around Birmingham, one of them being the Bullring fruit and veg market stores. So getting ammunition for the game against Preston wasn't much of a problem. And obviously, to the mad few, cabbages are free. But, I mean, I was in Aldi this evening. And one cabbage is 49p, which if you were going to tell me a couple of weeks ago that all I had to pay to get rid of Bruce was 49p, I would have paid it straight away and said keep the change from a 50p piece.
You can't put a price on progress.
In this show, instead of going into the full show, we will be just reacting to Steve Bruce and his dismissal, just digesting what has happened and discussing that. And then later on, there will be, I think just as the international break starts, there will be a new full episode. But leading up to this week, he had two games, and there was a trickle of reports in the papers saying, you know, he's got to win them both, or that's what he'll be judged on. But if he didn't beat Preston, he's suddenly one win in 10, and it's like, why wait until Millwall to get rid of him? Because you need the extra week to do the search. So anyway, obviously he didn't win against Preston. It was DEFCON 1, and TalkSport rang me up to go on the show. I think it's TalkSport 2. So I was on the show, I don't know, 10 minutes or so, giving the case to why it's time to move on. And then I think within 3 or 4 minutes coming off that show, it was announced Bruce was sacked. So I thought it must have been quite persuasive in what I said. So maybe Wes Edens and Nesef were listening to it. Anyway, what were your initial reactions? I mean, actually being at the game in the context of Bruce staying or going, and then obviously what happened to...
I wasn't surprised at all. I thought we'd had the rumour that, or the piece through from the Telegraph, wasn't it, that said he had 2 games. I went to Bristol. I thought that was alarming, but it was the manner in which we lost control of the Preston game. I think the ground had turned... To look as we did and to look as clueless as we did from the line, and it felt ominous. And we heard his post-match interview, which sounded as though he was, it was the usual roll the sleeves up. But I think that his card was marked at that point. That
he also did almost invite them to get rid of him, because he did state he did say, well, it's up to other people now.
No, it came as no surprise.
So in terms of the timing, I mean, let's run through some of the stats. Since that, the 4-1 Wolves game where, I mean, mid-February, we'd just beaten the Blues, we were second, and we were suddenly, despite a poor start, in the race to get promoted. That's started to fade. I mean, mostly because at that stage, it was because Cardiff and Fulham were actually on a great run. But then after beating Wolves, it was in mid-March, or early March, shall I say, we were back at the races. But then since then, going into this season, in terms of the league games, which will include the playoff games and the playoff final, he's had 8 wins since Wolves in 24 games. And obviously this season, he's on a run of, or he was on a run of 1 win in the last 10 games, which I think in isolation, both of those stats in this modern day are sackable.
I mean, it's unacceptable, isn't it, for a Villa team anyway in this division with the resources he's had, is disgraceful. You look at who they've played as well. You know, we haven't been playing what you'd look at and say that these are teams that are going to be challenging, or dare I even say there or thereabouts.
And that's why I wonder whether you look at the results and the performance, perhaps more than the results against Preston, is that when Preston got a sniff of the game, they completely took control. The worst team in the division with the worst defensive record, pretty poor away record. And they looked, when we lost Chester, we completely fell apart. And, in terms of, we talk about plan B, don't we? And there's been an absence of a plan A for Villa for a long time. And I think that if you were to condense Bruce's, his style into 96 minutes of football and everything that he'd done wrong at Villa, you only had to look at how we were in the last 40 minutes of that football game. It was chaotic.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think the game, the first half, was kind of showed moments of how Bruce got results last year, and especially the year before. I wouldn't have said we were all over Preston by any means, but when we actually got chances, we were quite clinical, to be fair. And that's kind of been something that Bruce has relied on a lot, in that his strikers, when they get a chance, they have finished them. But as soon as, things start to come unraveled, they really do fall apart quickly.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
There was an air of like Monty Python-esque about the whole game. And
definitely,
there's just something very hapless about Villa. When the boot's on the other foot and we've played teams with 10 men, we've seen what 10 men normally do. They get very tight, they play in two banks, and essentially they're playing without a striker at the top, but that just means they don't push forward as much. So you've still got the same, let's say, defensive strength.
For 30 minutes now, yes, we could have been better with 10 men. There's no question about that.
Villa just fell apart. They just folded completely. And you're thinking, well, here's a guy who's built his reputation on his teams being tough to break down at the back. So you think 10 men is like no problem. And, obviously they got a penalty, so 2-1. But you thought... Well, you didn't think, because you knew what was going to happen. And when the third one went in, you were not surprised.
It was almost a reminder of winding back over the last 3 or 4 years, really, of how Villa teams of those seasons collapsed. But if we're looking about where it went wrong, I mean, even, you know, in the confines of that one match. And that's why I see it as very much the epitome of why he's found himself sacked and why we're struggling so much this season. Look at the goalkeeper situation that we found ourselves with.
Yeah, embarrassing.
You know, with using the, I think most of all of us picked up on it very quickly that he's brought two keepers in. Basically, they're terrible. He shipped out the perhaps the second choice goalkeeper on loan and finds himself using the third choice goalkeeper, who we know not to be good enough. I mean, look at the positioning for the free kick that goes in from Preston. And if that had been Nyland, we'd have been screaming. And those are the kind of things that defy logic in his team selections.
The game, the Preston game, was really proof that Bruce's luck had just run out and it's run its course. You know, there were so many games last year, and especially the season before, where he'd had that knack of being able to play badly but get results. And that ability seems to have seeped out of this Villa team. You know, in the previous years, Codger would nick a goal. Last year, there were moments of genius, or we had an ability to have a moment of quality or grind out a result, and that just seems to have dissipated. You know, the penalty decision kind of summed up, you know, another day it's either not a penalty or it's a penalty and a yellow card. The fact that he got a red, which I don't think it was according to the law anyway, but the fact that even Bruce can't get the breaks with those little things, you just think this is a guy who cannot buy a win. He can't get a break. You just think this, his luck has run out, really.
I think it showed the fragility, didn't it, as well?
Yeah, but I don't think it's not about Bruce being unlucky.
Well, you make your own luck. I mean, I'm a firm believer in that. And I think that you look how fragile, just take our defence was. You know, we lost Chester and then we're swapping in Bree. We've taken off a striker yet again and he made the wrong choice.
The wrong striker, I might add.
The wrong striker. I mean, I was at Ashton Gate when we ended up with all the wingers on the pitch, all the creativity and no bugger in the box to plaster them.
And didn't we finish last night with four right backs?
Yeah, across the back. But,
and those are the kind of things that they're glaring, aren't they? They're glaring errors for a seasoned manager.
If I may argue in his corner, in terms of if you're playing with 10 men and
I'm throwing cabbages at your corner right now.
And you've got to choose one striker. The fact that Codger can get the ball and then occupy four players, I could see the logic of him staying on, because he can be a nuisance when he's got the ball. He's not going to pass it to anybody, but the whole idea is he will run the clock down when he's trying to beat five players or whatever it is. So I can kind of understand why he went for Codger over Abraham in that respect.
In game, it was because Codger had faded badly at that point in the game. And so it wasn't so much that, because I agree with what you're saying, that in terms of the hold-up player, that he's shown up that you know, that trickery. But it was the wrong choice at that moment. And then for just as the game really did turn on its head for him to then withdraw Codger, I think, for Bolasie. You know, it was, you think this is a desperate roll of the dice, really. Without any plan, it's really just get on there and try and affect the game,
but
really.
To be fair, it paid off because Bolasie did get that equaliser.
It did, but I don't think you could say that it was a true kitchen sink job, really, that was, you know, there was
we
no...
hadn't, when we got the corner, we hadn't actually crossed the halfway line, had we? Barely in the second half, I don't think.
No, exactly.
I think that was the first time we actually had the ball in their penalty area, which shows how bad Preston were.
This is the interesting thing. We had, when we went 3-2 down and then suddenly went for it, we were capable, even with 10 men, because we have the players and the quality to impose ourselves on Preston. And, you know, we should have won the game. Let's be honest here. We had a proper penalty taker at that time.
It's just typically Villa, isn't it, when you're walking it at half time?
But it's another example of the players are there in the squad to do much better than we are doing. Because even when we were down to 10 men, 3-2 down, we still managed to, you know, get at Preston. And they seem to be up for it, because this is not the first time we've rallied in the last seconds. And this is a great trait to have. It's a great trait to have, not to give up.
I've heard,
there's one Villa fan saying, oh, the fitness, there's nothing wrong with our fitness. We're playing to the end and we're getting most of our points in the last, in injury time.
But I think the thing that stuck out for me, particularly because of the opposition, and caveat it with respect, is that Preston are the worst side in the division and we haven't played anyone of any real note in the league yet. And I just thought that it was the frustration, as you say, that on the one hand, even with 10 men, we could hurt them, but we hadn't really worked out how to. But the ease at which that when they thought, do you know what, we can get into this game, the ease at which, even with a bank of two fours, they got through us. And that's...
We're straying off the topic of Bruce here, but I was, just quickly, I was not impressed with our midfield, which had no shape when we were down to 10 men, and they just allowed themselves to be run through at will.
They'd actually been run through earlier, you know, because at half-time, Alex Nicol, to be fair to him, had obviously given Preston a bollocking and brought Daniel Johnson on, and straight away you could see the change of shape, and they overran us in midfield before they even got the penalty. Then with the extra man, it was essentially 5 against 3.
Yeah.
We couldn't get the ball back, and we couldn't keep the ball either. There was never an outlet for when sort of Hourihan, McGinn or Grealish got the ball. Grealish sort of cut a very frustrated, desperate figure in the second half, as a lot of the players did.
I think if you were to look at our midfield, you'd have been...
There was no shape to the midfield.
What was that shape, and what shape were we going for? You know, McGinn was... I was watching McGinn as the game went on, because his influence faded. You know, he did that, you know, his terrier-like in the first half in setting up that and earning that assist, I suppose, for Abraham's goal. But in the second half, the game passed him by for long periods, and you thought, what is he actually playing? And, you know, what is his role in the second half? And the same with Hourihan. Is that individual players not affecting the game? Is that Bruce's fault because they've been told play to this plan? You know,
I don't think players really know their roles. I mean, previously, the previous game, in the amount of times at Bristol that I saw Codger pop up and just in front of the right back, you'd thinking, what the hell's he doing there? This is a complete waste of time.
I thought the same at Bristol and again against Preston about Bjarnason, that you can see all the technical attributes that Bjarnason's got, and we don't take any advantage of them. You know what? It all boils down to, I don't think in the end Bruce actually knew what his best team was or what the best positions for the player. Because I think we've got a decent squad. I think it's very unbalanced. You know, just look at the right backs, for instance, and the midfield options we've got. And what that's created is, you know, in line with this plan to try and rotate Jedinak and try and include Whelan at certain points, it's confused the picture. You know, we haven't got a shape, we haven't got a go-to formation and set of players where you think, right, that's the 11 that's going to get us promotion.
Well, as he admitted himself a few games back in the post-match interview, he'd got the players in and now he just had to find a system for them, and it should be the other way around.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's on the tip of everyone's tongue, isn't it? Because that was essentially what you just described. What Wolves did is they said, right, this is our philosophy and this is our...
Yeah.
You know, this is how we're going to play. Let's get the players to fit that. And I'm not going to say that that's going to work every time, but the way that we've gone about it is it's chronic, because another manager, and we're going to get to it shortly, is, I think, going to pick the pieces up there. And I think what we'll find is we've perhaps got a number of good players who actually are all in the same position, you know, so there could be a lot of backfilling.
I mean, let's get back on to Bruce as a manager. We've kind of strayed off a little bit. Obviously, Preston's fresh in our heads. How much of an impact in terms of his personal situation last season do you think that had on Villa faltering in the final kind of weeks? I mean, obviously it's not ideal, but you see a lot in the media all mentioning this, but is it important to like separate that? So do you think Villa fans have turned too sharply on Bruce, or do you think it's just a matter of results not being good enough?
I think certainly from the fans I speak to regularly is that actually, a lot of Villa fans have been more than respectful of him.
Yeah.
Even in their criticism, you know, you're always going to get idiots who make very personal attacks and they go after his son on Twitter. And I don't agree with that. And I don't particularly think throwing vegetables is particularly classy either, although quite amusing in the fallout. Yeah. But I just think there were points last season when, you know, his personal life clearly affected him. But what you tended to find through those games, I think it was definitely in the Blues game. I think that was when it first broke the news, and the Wolves game similarly. And actually, it had a positive effect on the team, because you noticed through that period, the players really rallied round. I remember numerous times when they were celebrating goals and they all ran over to Bruce. There was a real sort of togetherness, as is often the case when those sorts of things happen. I think what might have happened the longer it went on was that the sort of the mental fatigue of everything that's gone on in Bruce's private life has sort of seeped into his decision making. Certainly this season, at the start of the season, he was just making a lot of decisions that are just tired, sort of fatigued decisions. It's just the kind of the thought process of a man who's just not quite at the races. He's not sharp.
Because he was making decisions that he'd already made last season and admitted publicly last season were mistakes.
Yeah, and he's almost overcompensated for things like, you know, last season he probably didn't rotate his squad enough when he more than had the resources. This year, he's kind of completely gone the opposite way, and overly rotated and actually has had no continuity. So I think he's kind of, I can respect what's gone on in his private life. I can accept that, you know, fair play. He could have very easily walked away after Fulham and said, you know, bollocks to this. I've got stuff going on. I don't need this hassle anymore, especially with all the financial stuff going on. So fair play to him for that. But on the flip side, you know, football's a, you know, it's a harsh business he's in. He knows that it's a results game and the numbers sort of speak for themselves. And if you take the numbers aside, the performances do as well. You know, people who've watched Villa regularly aren't seeing progress, and people aren't talking about necessarily just this season or the period after things went on in his private life. People are talking about right back to last October. You know, this isn't an overnight thing. You know, Bruce is sort of playing on the fact that the fans have turned on him in after five games of this season, and that's really out of order to throw that at the supporters, because actually the, you know, the mad few have been very cynical of him really since the January, sort of the Christmas period of the first season he was there. You know, when we kind of got within touching distance of the top six and then completely imploded.
And at the same time, I think the mad few have also been pretty patient with him and have taken into account his personal situation. But if this season, for example, we're in the Premier League and we're in, you know, 13th, 14th, 15th place, whatever, I think Bruce is still staying on. But in the division we're in, there's only one solution we're looking for. And it doesn't matter where you finish, we just have to get promoted, full stop. It's no good having a good season, finishing fourth and not getting promoted. That means nothing. You might as well finish, you know, 19th. Doesn't matter.
Mm. And I think that's the point, that we're now a season too late and facing the prospect that if you don't get promoted this season, that, you know, the problems that we experienced in the summer will be nothing when you apply a massive point deduction and a fine to the situation. You can have as many billionaire owners as you want. I think to add my bit in, because I think Chris has summarised, and yourself, very well, I think fairly, how moderate Villa fans would feel about Bruce is, and all I would add in is that it's something that Chris mentioned on the last podcast, that Bruce did, you know, he looked tired and he looked like he needed a break from football. You know, that was, I think that's a very honest reflection that he had. This isn't a personal issue that I think many Villa fans would have for Bruce. I think that if you're looking at it from a professional point of view of what he was charged to do at the football club, is that actually you know, he recovered us from a dreadful position when he inherited under Di Matteo, and I think he laid down some of the groundwork. What we didn't do, what he wasn't capable of doing, for a variety of reasons, some his fault, some I think talk to Tony's, and maybe, you know, maybe Wyness to some greater or lesser degree. He didn't establish a style on the field or off the field for the football club. And what has happened is for a number of weeks and months, you know, I was very, very open in saying that I was on the fence with Bruce, but there's been a rapid deterioration where I think football clubs don't fear playing Aston Villa because we've been worked out and we're vulnerable across a number of areas of the pitch. And I think it's very sad that what's happened to Bruce in his private life. And I think it would be naive to think that that hasn't impacted upon him in the workplace. You know, it has to have.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that, you know, it's admirable on the one hand that he carried on and pushed through. But if we park all that to one side, his job as manager of our football club was to get us promoted ultimately last season. And I think if circumstances had been different with the club financially, I think he probably would have been sacked in the summer. Really, you know, if we're completely honest.
In the first season, he was openly saying that he had arrived at the Blues in a worse position at a similar time and got them promoted via the playoffs. And you could tell by what he was saying, and he actually admitted that was his aim this season, and it was attainable. I mean, we were in a poor position when he started, but hey, so were, you know, teams like Wolves and Cardiff at the time he took the job. I mean, Cardiff were actually below us, and Neil Warnock got the job in the same week as Bruce. But the thing was, so he failed in the first season in my book. I mean, my book, you know, he was within, I think it was around Christmas, the turn of the year, within about 5 points of the playoffs.
I think we were actually closer, you know. I think if I remember rightly, we beat Burton on Boxing Day, and I think we went within about 2 or 3 points of the playoffs. I think we were at seventh or eighth position.
Yeah, and you expected us to kick on is what I'm saying, and they were attainable is also what I'm saying. So he failed there.
And that's been a theme of the Bruce era, hasn't it? That we've never gone on a sustained run at any point, really, where you would thought, you know, we're the absolute business here. You know, we would make statements like thrashing Wolves and beating the Blues, and then our form would collapse. And it's how many cycles of that you can tolerate really without becoming intolerable, I guess.
And meanwhile, you've got the press essentially telling us and almost force feeding it to fans that this is the promotion expert. The promotion expert, I hasten to add, that's never won the championship and, you know, scrambled through most of the times. And then also, even to this day, I just saw somebody mention on Twitter, Alan Brazil on TalkSport running a segment.
His friend.
That Villa fans were bitter with Bruce and giving him a hard time because of his Blues connection. I mean, no, come on, we're above that. I mean, no. I mean, for example, you know, we're Alan Brazil's not fit to intellectually shine our shoes, and that's not being. and we're talking about us and our listeners. It's yeah, I mean, they're just running on, you know, the basic common denominator bullshit just to get, you know, listeners.
But I was thinking there's a small other dimension to this as well, and it's something that I don't think has been picked upon as being nearly as important as I think it is that football managers go through phases where their style of management and their style of play is effective. And I suppose the current one would be that Mourinho is all of a sudden starting to look like quite an outdated manager. Not because his style perhaps didn't work at a time, but football progresses, it changes, it adapts. And yeah, I think if you look back at the Championship 10 years ago, it wouldn't have been seeing styles of play and the kind of money and approach that we've seen with Wolves. You look how Brighton, you know, got very organised behind the scenes and over a period of years, you know, developed into a good outfit with Chris Hughton. And you look at, you know, Newcastle with Benitez and the spending and the sheer brute force promotion that they achieved.
Yeah.
You know, and Bruce's style against it, especially when you look at how Warnock got Cardiff out of the division, it made him look, I don't want to use the term dinosaur because that's one, but he didn't, his game didn't evolve, did it?
Because in many ways, like Warnock's team was kind of similar to Bruce with the Blues back in the day when they came up and beat Villa. In that first season, they played as did the double over us, didn't they, with Bruce in charge. It was kind of this blood and thunder in your face.
Yeah, I was about to say 100%
effort, which we've never really shown that.
I was about to say Cardiff were effective at what they could do across the pitch. We've always looked.
Yeah,
you can always look at a Villa starting 11 under Bruce. Unfortunately, in the Preston and Bristol game and the Sheffield Wednesday game were no different. You could circle players on the team sheet who you thought, if I was the opposition, I'd be looking there. That's always been the worry for me, that we haven't had, you know. Just briefly touching upon a Warnock team, that you wouldn't necessarily know many names on the team sheet, but you'd say, well, you go, I see what his job in the team is. I see what he's trying to do.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, I think last season we had a better team than this season in terms of actually being a team.
Absolutely. And balance as well.
And I think last year what we had that we seem to lack at the moment is right up the field. We actually had a relative like leader or a stable player. Mm. We had a much stabler goalkeeper. We had a much more solid centre-back pairing. I think in the middle of the park, we actually knew that it would be Jedinak or Whelan more often than not. I don't think Bjarnason had come into the fray as much. I think we knew that through the middle, certainly later on, it would be probably Graben leading the line. We had Snodgrass, who further up the field would lead our attacks. We had focal points all over the field, I think, now.
We didn't have a collective team as such, but there was just a bit more like strength in area, shall we say.
Yeah, you look at us now, and I think if you're in opposition, you look at how Villa are set up, and it's very much a case of if you double up or triple up, as it has been the case on Grealish. You can really stifle Villa. Whereas actually, you look on the team sheet, and there should still be enough. If you took Grealish out of that side, they should still have enough to be more than competitive against the sides that they've been playing.
Well, I've dropped hints in recent player rating columns to actually, you could drop Grealish, because at the moment, there's nobody running off him. There's not that much movement. So most of the time, the scenario is he gets the ball, he runs into traffic, or he gets, you know, taken out and we get a free kick. But there seems to be no end result. I mean, you look at all the great players. They manage, they're quicker of mind, they're quicker of thought because they're targeted, and that doesn't stop their end product. And you don't just see them continually being fouled with there being no end product. He hasn't kind of quite learnt yet how to evade that challenge, how to evade that kind of man marker, and how to get the ball off a bit earlier.
That might be one of the reasons why you'd look at, say, if he had gone to Spurs, their fans might be looking at him going, well, he's not a Dele Alli, and he's not a Son, and he's not a Dembele, and he's not an Eriksen. He simply isn't in that league yet. Yeah. Can he be? Probably. Is he near there? No, not at the moment. Whereas you look at how someone like Maddison steps up into the Premier League, and he's done really well. He looks Premier League ready.
Yeah, because Grealish likes to slow the play down as soon as he receives the ball, which is probably not the greatest way to go in the Championship, because as soon as he does that, he's swamped and he's suddenly making life harder for himself. And I think that's something he has to address.
I was just about to say exactly that. The one thing that forces me to roll my eyes with Grealish, and I do think he's an excellent talent and a genuine threat that we carry. There's two things he does. He's very guilty of taking the pace out of attacks, especially when we're on the break. And there's a second annoying thing that I've seen he's developing, and that's indecision when he's breaking in on goal.
Yeah.
Key moments, actually. I mean, it was evident against Preston again, where he was bursting in on goal, had the opportunity to release a player, delayed, we lost possession. And there was another occasion quite early in the first half where he burst forward and he had plenty more time where he could have carried the ball in closer on goal, but he fired an effort, you know, not so far wide, but you think it's that discipline.
Not as wide as Hutton's attempt.
Oh, good grief. Well,
that was shades of Emil Heskey, that was, against Manchester United.
Grealish, we can allow for inexperience and youth and the fact that he's got to develop with, I think, better players around him in time. Hutton is Hutton, I think.
I didn't want to take you off the Grealish. I just wanted to throw that in as a quick gag.
No, but I think...
Don't waste our time talking about Hutton.
No, okay. you know, but in a sentence, I wanted to capture that it's another one that personifies the Bruce era. You know, we've got the Scottish Cafu and expect that we're going to be... Yeah, come on. But yeah, Grealish, put, you know, he needs to, I was just saying, he needs to develop that discipline where I think top players, especially at this level, you know, he at the moment he's trading a little bit still on promise and on his name, and he needs to start delivering for the club. And you know, I think only, we'll never know who really took charge of that 96th minute penalty. But I want my marquee player stepping up and lashing that home in front of the
I was just about to say that your Dele Alli's, your Ronaldo's, Michael Owen, whoever, when they're 23, is Dele Alli 23 yet? And you get a penalty, they pick it up and they take it. Considering who's on the pitch, and you know, you're looking at, it's either Grealish, it's McGinn, it's Bolasie, and I thought Bolasie would take
Bjarnason it. Bjarnason even.
Bjarnason, although he was still feigning injury after he won the penalty.
He was assaulted by Daniel Johnson. It was quite clear.
He did. I mean, like the Preston player won that penalty, Bjarnason definitely won this. But, you know, fair play to him. We need some of that continental wiliness in our team. But yeah, I understand the whole, the experienced men will take it, but the experienced Whelan, who has scored one goal in seven seasons, does not take that penalty if nobody else is going for it. If Grealish says that this is mine, he's not going to say, no, Jack, this one's mine. I am the best penalty taker in the squad. And if Bolasie says, no, I'm taking it, Bolasie takes it. But I just want to bring this back to Bruce. I don't know if you saw, there is a video going about when Whelan's going up to take that penalty, before he even starts his run, we're talking a good, you know, a minute before, Bruce has turned his back on the situation. He's facing the other way. Now, I mean, it's a quantum jump to Pep Guardiola, but Pep Guardiola and even Martin O'Neill, let's use Martin O'Neill. Martin O'Neill or Pep or that kind of manager is living the game. They're in it. You know, they would be calling out who's going to take that penalty. And if Whelan says, I'll take it, and they know that, you know, Bellassi should take it, he would tell Bellassi to take it. But Bruce almost turned his back on the situation. And for me, that was just, and I'm not interested in this superstitious bollocks about, I mean, in a penalty shootout when the tensions are high, you know, maybe. But in this situation, his fucking job was on the line and he should have been less passive in that situation.
Absolutely.
It's a thing of trust and responsibility, isn't it, on all sides? It's who does Bruce trust? And then on the field, does Whelan potentially go, do you know what, I don't trust you guys to bury this?
But there's a couple of ways of looking at it. I've looked at the video over and over again, and I'm not, you know, some people are saying that Whelan was waving people away. There's, you know, from what I can see, there's a very minimal debate in the penalty area around who's taking it. And there was, I'm awfully unsettled about, you know, what that meant. The players would have, you know, it's not just about turning that game around, what that meant in terms of the manager's future potentially. And there was it stinks of Whelan being the only one who had the bollocks to put that on the spot for me.
Because
all the things we've just been talking about don't point towards him naturally getting the ball. And like you say, where are the, you know, you've already quite rightly said that I think that your marquee players who are thinking, bloody hell, I've got a chance not only to put another goal against my name here, to win the game, to thump it home in front of the Holt end and potentially save the manager's skin.
Yeah, it's the fact that nobody...
No one was tearing the ball out of his hands, were they?
No way Whelan takes that penalty if other people are interested.
Exactly. And that's what I can't believe, that if... given what that meant, you know, just a mere matter of seconds and minutes earlier, we were losing that game. It was 3-2. It was dead and buried. You know, I don't understand how Bruce didn't want to make sure that the right... You know, drawing upon all that experience, you know, you're telling me in his days at Man United that Ferguson would have turned away at that moment and just let anyone, you know, fucking Gary Pallister or someone wander up to the, you know, it just wouldn't have happened.
Gary Pallister was quite good at penalties. He used to belt them straight down the middle.
Whelan should have done, by the way. Should have just fucking leathered it.
And I think, as I mentioned earlier on, he had three touches of the ball in the 8 minutes he was on the pitch. And you really want your penalty takers to actually have warmed up in the game, so to speak. So yeah, that was baffling, and you can put it at the foot, you know, the foot of Bruce in that respect. I mean, granted, there was no player on the pitch who had taken a penalty for Villa before, if I'm not mistaken. But as we've said, and we'll say it again, the fact that Whelan was the only one to, you know, have the balls to do it says a lot of the players that weren't volunteering.
I agree.
So well done, Whelan. You got him sacked. You and the cabbage. So just quickly, I mean, we can talk about this more on the next show, but in terms of potential managers to replace Bruce and the kind of direction you would want Villa to go, now we are looking at this for the second time, for example, Thierry Henry. No experience, but the character of the man suggests Whelan wouldn't have been taking that penalty if Thierry Henry was the manager. In terms of Henry, would you give it to somebody who obviously hasn't had any experience so far, legitimate experience so far, and hope that his razzle-dazzle... I mean, I think players would, if they won the first few games, they would play for him and he'd be off to the races.
It's really hard to gauge with Henry, because in the short term, I actually think he would probably come in and sort of inspire a few of them, and he'd certainly demand respect. And, you know, and sort of get the best out of people, like, you know, Codger and Abraham, I'm sure, would respond to him. The back, would he be defensively clued up enough to get the most out of what we've got at this particular moment?
I don't know. Who would be?
You would think he'd have contacts. He might be able to pull a few strings, be it in France or at Arsenal or elsewhere. You know, he'll have a very tasty phone book, I'm sure. Whether or not this is the right job for him right now, I don't know. And there's also a lot of reports that he's actually holding out for a job in the Premier League.
Yeah, but I think he has to prove himself first somewhere.
He has to cut his teeth somewhere.
But I mean, we could go through every bloody name, it'd take ages. But in terms of the type of, are we talking long-term manager here, to get us promotion and be the manager for the next three or four seasons, if such a manager exists, because most managers tend to last two seasons tops. Are we talking about a manager short term just to get us up, and then we readdress the situation, you put him on a one-year contract and you readdress the situation if we get promoted, or, you know, we don't?
Bruce was essentially the safe bet, who was like, he'll get you up in a couple of seasons, guarantee. Yeah. That hasn't worked. I think there has to be a certain amount of, especially with the new regime coming in, who are obviously thinking about sustainability and moving forward and doing things correctly, I think they have to think of someone who will build something. Because potentially, if this season doesn't go well, the goalposts are going to move dramatically, and somebody who's going to require big financing to get Villa up might not be the way to go. That's where potentially someone like a Dean Smith or someone who has experience with a smaller budget, being more sort of wily, clever in the market, can get the best out of what he's got and also be very hands-on on the coaching side, which apparently Bruce wasn't. You know, I think from what the press have been talking about, the two or three that sort of jump off the page, obviously Henri is the kind of the box office name, but very unproven. Dean Smith, there's no guarantee he'll leave Brentford. He's recently signed a contract extension, and I think he believes in what he's doing there. He's certainly in a position where he isn't going to get sacked
anytime
soon.
This is not a vintage year for Championship teams, and Brentford are actually probably got, I'd say, one of their better teams in recent years. So if there's ever a season that Brentford can get to the Premier League, I think this is it. So it's up to him whether he wants to, let's say, run with a team that he's built or do the whole childhood dream kind of adventure.
I think if he wants to play that, you know, that the sort of the childhood dream card, I think now would be the time, because I think if Villa got their shit together and got themselves promoted, I think that opportunity would come again. Because you don't necessarily know, you don't know where the glass ceiling is for him with Brentford. You know, will he take them as far as he can and then eventually run out of steam if they can't actually get it over the line, you know, without big investment that I don't think they have access to? This could be the big opportunity for him.
Once upon a time, Villa got the hot young manager of the lower leagues in Graham Turner, going back in the 80s, and that basically led us to get relegated because he was completely out of his depth. And, you know, after success with Shrewsbury was a different kettle of fish to actually taking over the former European champions at the time.
I think that might be where I would chip in, is that the lists of names are already starting to appear. And I think we're going to have to tolerate a lot of this over the next couple of weeks. But I mean, all I would throw into the mix is I think that this is every appointment where we have a change in manager over the last couple of years has felt like a very significant appointment that we need to get right. I think that we're fast approaching last chance saloon with
the end game.
I think we are, in terms of the immediacy that we need to get out of this league this season, else things are going to change drastically. And without wanting to be prophets of doom, the reality is, again, that the lifespan of a manager is two seasons. For the first time, my view is I think that we need to cast the net very wide. I think we need to get a manager who's going to fit in this quite modern way of working, where really it's a head coach that sits alongside what sounds to be a sporting director. And I don't have any particular issue with that. But I think we almost need a blend.
Yeah, there's a lot of, let's say, youngish, and when I say youngish, I'm talking around the mid-40 kind of range, European managers out there, you know, like Oscar Garcia, Sanchez Flores, even, you know, Paolo Fonseca, who's at Shakhtar at the moment.
We need someone to inspire. We need someone to hit the ground running now that we almost can't. Yeah, I do see the argument for saying, I see the logic in saying someone like Dean Smith, but on the other hand, there's elements of risk there, and don't get me wrong, there's risk with it with I think any appointment that we'll be making, because I think there's from some of the phone-ins and some of the comments online, I think there's a belief that Aston Villa will have the pick of managers. I do think that we carry some weight, especially with I think a European manager who might be looking to make a name for themselves, but also I think that we come with huge professional risk.
Yeah, mainly because of our owners will make it attractive.
Well, exactly. But I also think that you don't have to look much further than someone like a Remy Gard, who was considered a top up and coming coach, And you get tarnished, I think, at Aston Villa very quickly and very easily.
He walked into an ambush, essentially,
Exactly. He wandered, an ambush is quite right. But I do think that we almost need to change the narrative and very, very quickly with Aston Villa. We need a blend. We need that. Perhaps we do need the personality of an Henry. We do need the unpredictability of a Garcia. You know, but they've all got flaws or they've all got risk. You know, Garcia's banded around, very exciting, very, you know, up-and-coming mid-40s manager, but leaves clubs very, very quickly. I think he hasn't got a club at the moment, I don't think.
No, but he hasn't.
As an example, I think this is a big appointment, and I think it's, if there's one good thing to come out of, the very sudden departure of Bruce and before the Millwall game, I think it's that it buys us a bit of time to really think about this.
Yeah, it's almost 3 weeks, isn't it, really? They're going to give themselves, or at least 2 weeks, because they'll want to give him time with the players.
Sorry, just to caveat that, and you know they've been looking for the last few weeks.
Mm.
Sorry, carry on.
If you did, but no, I think we discussed before, you would imagine as soon as they arrived, they would have given Bruce the respect of giving him time, but they would have, on the side, they would have been looking, this is how we want to do things here. You know, as we said in the last podcast, you know, they got rid of, I think it was 7 members of his support staff. They've got rid of all of his backroom staff and him. You know, it is essentially a complete clear out on the footballing side now. One thing I'd say that for someone new coming in is that, firstly, Villa have been dreadful, and yet I think as things stand, we're probably 2-3 points off the playoffs. We know we're not cast miles adrift yet. You know, you look at the players we've got, and I think most managers will come in and go, yeah, I can work with that. They'll probably want to add defensively in January, but you'd like to think with the assets we have, if we can get our shit together, there's no reason why you can't be there or thereabouts, as it were, challenging.
Yeah, relatively this league, quickly. This league is not good.
Because the end goal isn't going to change. I'd say top to bottom, from first to 24th, the average of each side is the weakest it's been for a long time. I mean, we said in previous podcasts earlier in the season when Villa were playing well, do you look down those list of teams and really fear anyone? And even though teams are getting a bit of form, I look at, you know, West Brom are in form, Middlesbrough, Leeds who've started well, Sheffield United who've started well.
But West Brom, sorry to jump in, Chris, West Brom are a good example. You look at the squad, they've not made drastic or radical changes. And I think though they came down in better shape than we did, this again goes back to the chronic summer that we had, that they basically went and did the business that we should have done. They got a stable goalkeeper because they needed one. And they went and got someone like Dwight Gayle, who at this level, you know, will score your goals all day long, you know. And that's the annoying thing that, to take your phrase, if we'd have kept our shit together and paid our bills, I think that we'd have come out the other side. Yeah, we'd have lost a few of the loan players, but I think that you could have had a more measured summer with or without Bruce. And I think that you would have arrived into this season going, hang on a minute, you know, there'd have been none of this, so that's the Championship rubbish. Because I think we'd have been looking across the landscape and going, do you know what? You know, Leeds, it's a tombola what they're going to be doing week to week. And I think if you can get on a run and you can, start to make teams fear you because you're starting to string wins together, I think this you can pull away. And I think a new manager, so long as we don't do something chronically stupid, and I hope to God we don't, we don't look in that pool of managers who seem to be on rotation with football clubs. I'm talking about the Moyeses, the Allardyces and company and Pardews. I hope to God we don't get beguiled by one of those types of managers, because we've been there, we've done that.
Or the fireworks of Paolo Di Canio.
It's the thought of that and an era like that, I can't see that happening, but stranger things have happened in football.
From the way the owners have come across, they seem quite reserved. I don't think they don't have the sort of public persona of the doctor had, as it were. I think they know they've got to get it right this time. They don't want a stellar name. They want the right guy for the job.
And
in everything else they've done so far, it seems that they've been quite methodical. Now, they didn't come in the first few weeks and start chopping people. And now they could have very easily come in and sacked Bruce instantly, got rid of all his backroom staff and said, right, the rebuild starts now. Because there will be a lot of the support, I would imagine, who would actually, in hindsight, say that's what they should have done and actually given themselves longer to rebuild. Potentially, we might have had a pattern of play by now, but...
But I think that the game, you know, walking away from the Preston game, I thought that was absolutely the right moment to sack Bruce. If you were going to do it, I could see the logic for that.
Yeah.
You know, I have to say, I thought, as you well know, I'd sat on the fence for a long, long time with this, but it's got worse and worse and worse to the point where you can't, You know, there was no discernible plan, and we look about as far away as we've ever been from being promotion candidates under Bruce.
But,
as I say, that I thought, you know, why are we waiting for Millwall if we're only, you know, what's going to change between now and then? And I wonder whether that's the realization that they've arrived at, that, you know, why not? You know,
Millwall's not going to, that one game's not going to tell you anything you didn't know. And you've only got 2 weeks anyway, so you might as well make it almost 3 weeks.
Mm.
So we've all decided Martin O'Neill manager and Roy Keane assistant manager.
The dream team. Is Paul Lambert still available? Because what I think is his style of play
director
has
of
now,
football.
Well, his style of play, he's now, he was ahead of the curve before. Ahead of his time. And
football has finally caught up to Lambert. He could teach old Nuno at Wolves a trick or two, couldn't he?
He sure could.
But seriously speaking, it's an interesting equation. I mean, obviously the news has just broken, and we're recording a reactionary podcast to the situation. So in the next show, obviously the picture may become a bit clearer, but we'll discuss it more in depth then. Is there any manager straight away that you just pray does not cloud our doorstep? I would probably say Sam Allardyce.
I think, probably financially you wouldn't want to go anywhere near Harry Redknapp.
Surely he's retired now.
He's probably due a bonus, isn't he, for keeping us up?
I'd cry if someone like Pardew came, or we made a chronic mistake like that.
Yeah, if Pardew came, I'm not talking about him or writing about him. I think that's me done.
It's over if he comes.
Yeah, it's over.
Or McCarthy, I'm not quite sure. There's a few people brandishing Mick McCarthy's name around. I'm not sure why.
People say Rafa Benitez, but Rafa Benitez has got former beef with our CEO, so that's not going to happen. The fact that Rafa Benitez is quoted as saying he knows nothing about football probably is an indication he's not coming. And also, he's at a Premier League club, and he's done that Championship thing. He doesn't need to do it again.
Yeah. He certainly doesn't.
I think even someone like a Ranieri could be quite interesting. Whether he's, you know, is he a bit, I know he's obviously older, is he more experienced, but he did, you know, amazing things with a relatively small budget at Leicester.
Was that the old Pearson team?
That team was set up for him, really.
Yeah.
It was ready to rock
and there's
and
obviously
roll.
The talk of someone like Brendan Rodgers from Celtic, you know, has he taken Celtic as far as he can? You know, have they reached that glass ceiling where if they don't have the money to compete how they used to in Europe, is he going to want to stick around?
Let's remind ourselves that Brendan Rodgers is the man who failed to get Liverpool past a Tim Sherwood-managed Villa team in the semi-final of the FA Cup.
What an insult that is.
I don't know if I'd be going for Rodgers, but Rodgers, it's kind of, he may do, if you know what I mean. It's not, you're not super excited, but you're thinking, well, you know, he could get the job done. I mean, romanticism like Olaf Melberg and stuff like that, I'm not buying into that.
I think, are we all probably in agreement then that although there are lots of potential sort of candidates, at the moment there's no what you'd call obvious fit, is there? There's no one who sort of jumps off the page who you go, yeah, that's, he's got to be the guy, or he'd slot straight in and he'd do the job straight off the bat. I think
it's easier to circle the guys you don't want at this point.
Yeah, agreed.
I think what I was hinting at earlier on is it's kind of up to potential managers to actually sell themselves, if you know what I mean.
And their
to
sort
us.
Of vision. And
it's not as if we are there in the market just picking and going, oh, this one will do us good. Because there's a lot of managers out there who we've mentioned who there's a lot of uncertainty about. So you need them, you know, three dudes doing a podcast. You need to be three men in the boardroom actually talking to them face to face.
Mm-hmm.
This is also could be a step back for some of the managers. I mean, they're looking at a Villa team in decay. They're looking at a Villa team who has become the new Forest, the new Sheffield Wednesday, the new Leeds. So this is a two-way thing. They have to sell themselves to Villa, but also the Villa owners have got to convince these guys that, you know, this is the way to go. And we're not actually in a crippled position where we are at the moment. And it's, you know, there is a potential to still get promoted this season because pretty sure the new owners want this season.
I think the carrot, fortunately, that the owners can sort of dangle at any new candidate is that
money.
There's money there, I think, in the short term. I would imagine in January, they'll be saying, if you get it right and it's looking like, you know, we're in amongst it, we will financially back you. Secondly, if you can get Villa up with the purses, you know, the purse strings that these guys have, you think it could get really interesting with, you know, some of the numbers that Wolves and Fulham were throwing around. There's no reason why Villa couldn't be throwing those sorts of numbers around as well if they were to get up.
Yeah, I think we're talking big promotion bonus as well. If you need a big carrot.
And the just potential for growth, essentially.
Yeah, and that's all we've wanted to do in the last few years is grow, and we've just been shrinking in terms of ambition. There's a few people out there still crying about Bruce leaving the club as well. And, you know, he was a likeable guy and a charming guy, so you, on a personal level, you kind of understand that. But results are results, and promotion, without it, everything else is failure.
Agreed.
So, on that note, we will be back in the international break with a more rounded show, and we'll discuss how Villa march on to promotion after the international break. In the meantime, please do tag friends in on social media to spread the word. Also, if you are wanting to contact us via Twitter, go to @AVFCpodcast. And if you want to support the show, and we are wanting to grow in different ways, especially in terms of going on location, so obviously we need equipment like that. So it's always helpful if you become a My Old Man Said Patreon, at the same time supporting independent Villa coverage that respects its readers and doesn't patronize them and deceive them with the clickbait model that most people use. Please do go to myoldmansaid.com and click on the patron option. Also, click on the shop option as well if you're looking to get a Villa shirt, whether it's retro, classic, one of the Luke Funky Bunch Dapper Villa range, or any of the official kit via Kitbag, because there'll be a little small kitback peanuts, basically, but still, every little counts. And also go to villaunderground.com, because that's still alive.
It's alive, it's kicking, it's got a big fat subscribe button. Come, enjoy.
Just try to.
Bring your cabbages.
And depending on who the new Villa boss is, you may want to buy some cabbages and put them in the freezer, just in case. Anyway, until next time, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
My old man said, I may you, you know it's true, Mr. Potato Head, I may you. My day is not to know stew, Mr. Potato Head, I may you. I may you, you know it's true, Mr. Potato Head, I may you.
Mr. Potato Head.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.